Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
It's probably the best way of learning about life in Japan if you want to learn about life in Japan from one man who's obsessed with a particular brand of ice cream and one man who is obsessed with a particular brand of, oh, I don't know, meat? You're like, you eat a lot of meat.
Beef. Yeah, there's a reason you don't do the intros, Pete. Because meat. Not quite as elegant.
Beef.
When you phrase it, is it?
No.
Dear, oh dear. I must admit, though, I am currently eating a Terry's chocolate orange. It's rather delicious.
If you don't live in...
We have those outside the UK.
No, if you don't live... Basically, it's a congealed cricket ball of chocolate. That also contains a zesty orange kick, and it's fairly
orange
pleasant.
Orange chocolate,
yeah, it's fairly pleasant.
It's good.
Great with a cup of tea.
I was down the there's a foreign goods shop in Sendai, and they sell sorts of things like cheese and crisps, like Lay's crisps from the US. And I saw the Terry's chocolate orange.
Said I'm having that.
I felt like I had to get it. Yeah, it's been glorious.
What kind
anyway,
of?
How have you been, Pete?
Good. Yeah, good. I'm just enjoying a cup of tea. Thinking about the foreign goods shop. What kind of cups of tea do they have? Because they always have a weird like Barry tea and stuff instead of your PG tips, your classics like your Yorkshire teas and stuff. They always have like Barry's tea or some kind of Irish mix. Who wants Irish
Barry's tea?
Yeah.
So if I see Barry's tea, I'll certainly be buying it. Just because who wouldn't want Barry's tea? No, unfortunately, it's just Twinings, the standard British overpriced tea.
Oh well, at least at least you can at least you can get some bit of Earl Grey. That's pretty pleasant. That's probably my tea of choice. I do like a bit of Lapsang every now and again, nice and smoky.
This is turning into the tea podcast.
Tea
review.
Yeah.
Absolutely. While I was in the Foreigner Goods shop, though, I saw the Foreigner Goods shop. That sounds kind of sinister. The Foreign Goods shop. I was spotted by some viewers from Thailand, which was quite an odd. I've never had any viewers from Thailand stop and say hello. So I was kind of caught off guard. I thought I'd done something wrong at first. They sort of stopped me and was like, oh, hello. And they sort of, I thought I was in their way or something. But it was kind of a weird moment. It's nice to know that the tentacles of the Abroad Japan Empire stretch all the way to Thailand, Southeast Asia.
I like the idea of you being caught shoplifting Terry's chocolate oranges, like half eating one, got one in your pocket, got two up your jumper,
bit
as if they're boobies.
Tea.
Yeah, bit of Barry's tea. Oh, that's good. So hello to the Thai people who saw you in the shop.
Did. Took a nice little photo. It was glorious, and it boosted my ego, as it always does when a fan or a viewer stops and says hello.
Somebody stopped me in a club in Cardiff. I went to Cardiff a couple of weeks ago, and somebody took a picture of me, and I was drinking a Bud Light. Now, if you're familiar with my proclivities, my interest in alcohol, Bud Light is very much not one of my favourite drinks. So I was caught on camera having a Bud Light.
That's effectively a crime.
Isn't that
Why
terrible?
I mean,
shocking.
Budweiser's not that good in the first place, let alone Bud Light. That's awful. What were you doing?
I don't know.
Why would you do that?
I just wanted something lighter. I just didn't want to drink anymore, but I wanted the fluid. So instead of getting water, I got myself a Bud Light.
That is not good.
Yeah,
that
not great, good is it? At all, not great.
Oh, well. Today, though, guys, we are doing a podcast episode dedicated to reading out your questions and stories from the fax machine. As I mentioned about a month ago, it's not a real fax machine. So if you do ask me for the fax machine telephone number, I'm not going to give it to you because it's not a real fax machine. That said, we should actually probably invest in a fax machine, Pete.
Yeah.
It would be kind of cool.
Well, I think you can get them digitally now. I don't think you need to worry about all of the... you know, the actual...
Nah, it's got to be analogue.
It's got to be analogue. Real. Has to be analogue.
There's no half measures on a fax machine. You've got to get the real thing. And it's got to be in your house.
Yeah.
In your apartment.
Oh, in my house. Corner. Okay, right, okay. In HQ.
A pile of Coolish ice cream and despair. But yeah, I don't know where we can get one. I'll have a look around the second-hand good shop. And there's bound to be a few going for a few thousand.
Yeah, I think you've got more chance than me of getting one.
Yeah, you never know what you can find. We'll give it a whirl. If I find one... we'll make it happen, but we probably won't. Either way, the first story is from Michael from Coventry in the UK. He says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. I'm loving the podcast. I discovered it about 2 weeks ago, and I've been ploughing through 4 episodes a day, and it doesn't get boring, so well done. 4 episodes a day, that's at least 2 hours. Well done. I visited Japan with a friend of mine 2 years ago and had a fantastic time. On our first night, after we landed in Osaka, we dined at the hilariously named Yakiniku grilled meat restaurant called Sex Machine. After befriending the staff, they took us on a booze-filled tour of Dotonbori with their friends until the early hours of the morning. Such a great and amazing welcome to the country. I'm planning on returning this October, this time with my girlfriend, and I'd be interested in any advice about any sites or places that are good for couples. Keep up the great work, Michael from Coventry." I must admit, I wouldn't be overly enthusiastic to walk into a grilled meat restaurant called Sex Machine, but each to their own. Sounds kind of fun, I guess.
I wouldn't be eating food in somewhere called Sex Machine. That just doesn't seem like a great place to eat. I mean, it's not a great name for a restaurant, really. I mean, whatever you're selling. I don't think.
What do you think?
It's a bit on the nose.
What do you think was going through the owner's mind when he woke up one day and was like, "Yes, I know what I'm going to call my grilled barbecue restaurant, Sex Machine"? at what point did he think, "Yes, this is definitely a good idea"?
I mean, it's not even like Love Machine might be a bit more, a little less on the nose. I just, you know, you only get one chance to put a name on the front of your building, and that just seems very. Very strange. But I guess branding in Japan, because all of the buildings are so kind of tightly packed together, and Tokyo is obviously the most populous in particular. Tokyo and Osaka, secondarily, is obviously a very populated place. And so you'd be in a situation where, like, your little logo would just be next to a load of other logos on a building that you could be on, like, the seventh floor or whatever. So I guess branding isn't quite as important as it is. You wouldn't need to make a bespoke sign or, you know, a shop frontage for it. You just need to have a little sign indoors and maybe some signs on the menu. So maybe you can rebrand quite easily in Japan. I don't know.
What would you call your grilled meat restaurant if you had one?
Hot meat, clearly. Hot meat sounds just as sexy. Hot greasy meat.
That kind of works. It still sounds messed up, but it works nonetheless. Probably better than Sex Machine as well.
What would that be? Hot Atsui Niku.
Atsui Niku, yeah.
Yeah.
We could probably go with Hotoniku.
Hotoniku. Hotoniku. Yeah, lovely.
Hotomito. We go full Guy Daigo. In terms of advice on things to do for couples, I would go to USJ, Universal Studios Osaka. That's where I went on 2 dates, I think. Two dates with 2 different girlfriends there. And they loved it. And I liked it too. And there's a really cool Harry Potter... They've built the whole of Hogwarts almost to scale. And it's just amazing. And it's the best thing ever. So if you like Harry Potter, take her there. And that's the only thing I can think of. It's good for couples in Osaka.
There you
Have
go.
You been?
Yeah, I've been to Osaka. Osaka?
You see Hogwarts?
No, I didn't go to the Universal Studios. Maybe take her on. There's a lot of towns have big wheels. Just take her on a big wheel. Everyone likes a big wheel. There's one near. Is it Odaiba? Pallet Town. Go to Pallet Town. Get on a big wheel in Tokyo. I don't know, Osaka. There's that one that's connected to the big shop.
Sea
What's
well.
That big shop? No, there's a big shop. What's that big shop?
Oh, Don Quixote.
Don Quixote. There's a big wheel in Don Quixote for some bloody reason.
There you go.
There you go.
Universal Studios and a big wheel.
Yeah.
What more could you possibly need? Got one from Jackson from San Francisco. I'll hand that over to you, Pete.
All right. Hi, Chris and Pete. I love the recent trend of incorporating weird and wacky stories from listeners. They're hilarious. I went to Japan for the first time in May 2017, right after university graduation. It was a great time, but I didn't have much money as it was before I began working. Now that I'm a grown working man... Ooh, look at you, Jackson from San Francisco. I'm a grown working man. I have money to spend for my second Japan trip to Tokyo in July 2019. I love Japanese food and want to blow my amassed wealth on a food tour that I will remember so that I will do... So I want to do extensive research before I go, but I noticed that Tokyo doesn't seem to use Google reviews or Yelp much. There are very few reviews. I want to know what apps/sites do Japanese people actually use to rate restaurants. How should I be identifying the best food places? Please share your wisdom. Thanks and never change. I mean, I don't know about you, Chris, but like, I would like to know this answer as well, because obviously whenever you go anywhere, and certainly somewhere foreign, when you get a place that's got like English reviews and good reviews, it's really swamped by tourists because obviously it's the only thing that's written in English. And obviously English is a universal language. So yeah, it would be quite nice to sort of figure out what's the site that locals use, and maybe we can try and translate from working backwards from there.
Well, I mean, I actually do use Google more often than not these days. It's got a lot more popular over the last few years. So usually I actually do use Google Maps. So I'll just go on Google Maps, type in the type of restaurant I want to go to, like a yakiniku barbecue restaurant, and then I'll just pick and see what the reviews are like. And if it's called Sex Machine, I probably won't go there. But another website, the one the Japanese people often use the most, is probably Guru Navi. Which literally means gourmet navigation. Guru Navi, GURUNAVI. And last time I checked, a lot of it is in English, or it's got this really dodgy translation tool, which they basically got some sort of Google Translate tool embedded in the website.
Right.
That makes it quite fun. But Guru Navi is one of the better ones. And on there, you can kind of look at an area and go to the best top-rated restaurants. So that's the one I would go to. And... I mean, Guru Navi is the one to go to.
Mm.
That's
Guru
the key.
Navi.
And they have it all listed and reviewed.
I'm writing that down.
Google reviews, about 2 or 3 years ago, it wasn't that popular. But these days, it seems to have been adopted by Japanese people, and it seems to work. So, yeah, don't rule it out. Definitely consider Google. Don't know what Yelp is. I've never really used that. So, avoid Yelp.
Thanks, Jackson.
That hasn't been invented here yet. And yeah, that's basically it, really. I eat out quite a lot. I eat out sometimes like 3 or 4 times a week. And Google has never let me down. I haven't been out for a bad meal. My only thing is I never go to a restaurant that has less than 4.0 on Google.
Mm.
Go below 4.0 and you never know what you might get.
I always found that bars and stuff get reviewed quite harshly from people because they don't understand cover charges and stuff. They don't like paying. I mean, it's a lot of skinflints online. Like, people who... there's something about... I remember reading a book about the creators of Viz, which is like a comic, like an adult comic England, in the UK. And the guy was talking about how people from the Northeast, no matter whether they're skinflints or not, they will, or good with money or bad, they will never resent spending money on booze. And so, like, there's a lot of bar reviews in Japan and anywhere around the world, really, where it's like, oh, the drink's a bit expensive. It's like, it's a drink. It's a glass of wine. You know, it's not going to be a pound. You know what I mean? So I think you take some of those reviews with a pinch of salt. And if you'd like moving on to like nightclubs or anything later than 1 o'clock in the morning, everyone's had a bad experience. Nobody goes to nightclubs for a good time. Nobody goes to that sort of place for a good time. So people are always having a terrible time. Oh, the bouncer kicked me out. The bouncer was horrible to me. The man stole my bag. Like, no one has a good time in there. So if you don't, don't expect a good time in there. That's all I'm saying. But certainly don't go on Google and go, oh, it's so terrible. The bouncer was horrible. The bouncers are always horrible. That's what their job is. Unless you're an American, they're very nice.
Damn bouncers. What's interesting when you look at a review is the reasons that it doesn't do well. I remember I was looking at a restaurant just yesterday in Sendai, and it got bad reviews. And the most common thing I see on Google, the reason Japanese people don't like a place, is usually it's the customer service.
Right.
The customer service isn't up to scratch. They're extremely critical in Japan of customer service, which is interesting because customer service is, in Japan, are like the best in the world. Mm. The staff treat you like a god. It's quite an interesting one, but they're very critical of customer service. So maybe you can let it go, given that our standards in the West are a lot lower.
Yeah.
Especially in the UK.
Massively.
Got one here from Jason. It says, hi, Chris and Pete. Ohio. From Ohio. It's clever, that.
Ah.
Love the podcast. I listen while I run, and I just caught up the most recent episode while running my first ever half marathon.
Wow.
Well done, Jason. I've never done a marathon, and I'll be damned if I do, or will, or, yeah, it's not happening. I'll be starting a new journey in North Japan as an ALT, assistant language teacher, in 2020. And my question for Chris is, when you moved to Japan, what did you bring with you, and what did you leave behind? Keep up the great work, guys. Your stories about Japan inspire me to keep moving forward in more ways than one. Cheers, Jason. I left behind everything, Jason. Mm. It was actually really kind of fun. I don't know if you've ever done it, Pete. If you've ever, I suppose you moved from Hartlepool to London, but when I moved to Japan, I sold off everything I had. I went to a boot sale, car boot sale. What are they called in America? Flea market.
Garage
right?
sales.
Garage sale or flea market. Mm. And I just sold all my DVDs. I caught a big DVD collection. I sold my car. I think that's all I had, DVDs and a car. But I made at least £200 from all my worldly possessions. And I spent that on like the train ride from Narita Airport to Tokyo. But I didn't really. It was just really liberating getting rid of everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Does it bring you joy? It's going in the bin. Didn't you bring a full pipe organ to Tokyo though? You insisted on bringing your favorite pipe organ. It was a weird aberration.
Pipe organ.
Yeah, like a massive church organ. That was foolish, I think, in many respects, Chris. You shouldn't have done that.
That sounds like the premise for a great film. weird British guy coming to Japan with a pipe organ. Mario Kondo'd my entire life, basically, and just chucked it all away. Nothing
How satisfying.
Brought me joy.
Yeah.
I was quite bitter, though. I had 100 DVDs that I'd spent thousands of pounds on, probably, and I sold them all for, like, £1 a DVD. Quickly realised that a DVD has no
meaningless
value whatsoever.
And, it doesn't... Yeah.
Worst investment ever.
Never mind.
I came with... I think I had, like... I borrowed some money from either my family or the bank. I borrowed a few £1,000. And that's all I really brought with me, just a few £1,000. I think I had £4,000. And that kind of saw me through until I got my first paycheck. So, yeah, just bring some money. Travel light, and I think it'll be a lot easier.
In the words
I'm not someone
of the...
who moves into somewhere and has to kind of inject my personality into it, though, in terms of like putting up photos and things on the wall.
I mean, what do you need more than like clothes?
Minimalism.
You just need some pants, some clothes, and a laptop. What else do you need, really?
Exactly, the big three: pants, clothes, and laptop, and money. Job done. Good luck, though, Jason.
Yeah,
as well.
Have fun.
Yes,
we've got an email from who's it? Oh, it's Adam. Adam from Saskatchewan. I think it's Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan.
Oh, God.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Saskatchewan in Canada. I think that's where the Yeti comes from, isn't it? Either way, I do a lot of voiceovers for a Discovery Channel derivative, and we do a lot of building Alaska, Alaskan bush people, a lot of people living off-grid in Alaska. Mm. It sounds very chilly. Anyway. Hi, guys. Adam here. I've been watching since 2016. And I've loved the podcast ever since the first episode. My favourite video being the Love Hotel one with the room filled with them stuffed animals. Yeah. My question is, we know that Japanese has many borrowed words in both the written and the spoken language, like words for camera and television and radio, as you've explained before. But I was wondering if there were any... is it Gairaigo? Gairaigo from languages
Gairaigo.
Other than English. Any Gairaigo from languages other than English?
Yeah, I think tempura is Portuguese, is it not?
Oh, right, okay. Yes, that rings a bell. That does ring a bell. I think I was in Lisbon last week, and I was having a in the menu it sort of said it had like the history of Portuguese colonialism, and it was like, we went to Japan and brought some of the batter with us, some battering techniques, and that's all we've done. It literally just said, that's all we did, was we go to Japan and we gave food to the world. And I was thinking, yeah, no, you definitely did some terrible things. Like every colonial power did some terrible things around the world. It was like, one of the things was, we took some batter to Japan. I was like, yeah, what about all the other stuff in the world you did, though? Naughty Portugal. Exactly. I would say my favourite J-League team is Ventforet Corfu, which is in Corfu. And they are a compound word of vent, meaning wind in French, and forêt, meaning forest in French. So, yeah, Ventforet Corfu.
I mean, there are quite a lot of words. Portuguese, because the Portuguese arrived in Japan quite an early time, they brought a lot of the language with them. So there's words like the word for velvet, they use the Portuguese word, which is, I think it's veludo. Veludo?
Ah.
Maybe. But in Japanese, gairaigo, the word for velvet is birodo.
Right.
Birodo. Sounds a bit like my name, broad. Birodo. Birodo. Using velodo, the sort of the Portuguese word.
Yeah.
So even beer, biru, is they taken from the Dutch word bier. Bier. Difficult one for me, given my lack of language knowledge outside of English and Japanese. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of Dutch, Portuguese. Germany, they use Deutsche, which is taken from the Dutch or German word Deutsch. So yeah, there's definitely a lot, but mostly it is English. There's no doubt about that. English is where it's at. There's French as well. French is pretty popular. That they use for the word beauty salon, they often use esté, using the French word esthétique. But I'm butchering numerous languages now, so I'll end it there. But there you go. You can find them out online, though. If you just type in, like, Japanese guide Igor, you can see a list, I think, on Wikipedia that gives you all the countries they come from. It's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. But, yeah.
Nice.
I say 80 to 90% are English. So, well done.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries.
It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Well, English. Hey, Chris and Pete, my name is Aviad, which is cool if you didn't pronounce it correctly. It's a very Jewish name. After travelling to Japan, I came to the conclusion that because of its unique culture, Japan isn't for everyone. And because I plan to travel back to Japan after the 2020 Olympics, I'm concerned because a lot of people who don't understand and respect the Japanese culture are going to be staying in Japan, and the Japanese might change their attitude towards tourists, and not in a good way. Do you think my concern is justified, or am I just jumping to baseless conclusions? Love the podcast. Keep up the awesome work, and have a good one. Aviad. That's a really good point, actually. It's something I'd thought about before. I mean, given the fact that a lot of British people are worried about how with the impending rugby coming up in September, a lot of people are worried how rugby fans might react. But certainly, yeah, it's a real issue. I think Japanese culture has a lot of rules and things that there's just so many rules. Like, there's so bloody many compared to most other cultures. And there's no doubt that a lot of those rules are going to be broken pretty easily by foreign travellers and foreign visitors coming to the Olympics. So, yeah, I think it could be a real issue. We'll certainly know afterwards.
Mm. I mean, there was a World Cup in South Korea and Japan a few years ago. So, I mean, they survived that. But I think I made it very clear my opinion about rugby fans a little earlier on. But you know, if they have to have a taste of how the rest of the world works, then you know we can't hide forever, can we? We can't. Our disgusting Western ways can't hide forever.
Hopefully, I'll see a nice, tasty boom in views on my 12 things not to do in Japan video.
Yeah, damn right.
Yeah, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Certainly, it'll be after the Olympics is over, there'll be loads of TV programmes and news about it. And yeah, I think that'd be really interesting, actually, seeing the Japanese thoughts on post-Olympic life and how it all unravelled. We'll find out. Only another year and a half to go.
Yeah, how do I get a slice of this action? How do I get flown out there? Do a few instructional videos.
Just do it. Pete in Japan.
Yeah.
Get on with it, Pete. Got one from Matt. Says, hello, Chris and Pete. My name is Matt, and I'm
a university
student from the great state of Washington. I often listen to your podcast on the walks to and from class or in bed before I go to sleep. My question is convenience store food truly as good as everyone says it is? I want to save money to go to Japan for 3 weeks in the near future, but I definitely won't have enough to be eating Wagyu beef and sushi every night. Is Lawson's, 7-Eleven or Family Mart good enough, for example, to sustain me for 3 tasty meals every day for a week without me losing my mind or getting diabetes? As always, keep up the great work. I'm looking forward to more podcasts. Best, Matt. What do you make of that, Pete?
Very easy for this one, Matt. Yes, you can easily have 3 square meals, if not 5 square meals a day from Family Mart, which won't break the bank, and you'll have a lovely time. So you don't have to eat in restaurants.
Well, I mean, when I cycled across Japan, for journey across Japan, I lived off of all 3 of those convenience stores pretty much every day for 2 months, and I didn't eat healthily at all. I ate a lot of fried food, a lot of unhealthy sandwiches, but it was pleasant. It was quite nice. So you can live off them, but it won't be good for your health. But if you're over here for just 3 weeks, you'll be fine. But certainly, a lot of the good work done from cycling over 1,000 kilometres across Japan was unravelled by my dietary habits going to these convenience stores. So healthy it's not, but convenient it is. And glorious.
Definitely. We got an email from Brian in Oregon. I have a friend I have a friend. He started learning Japanese in college, and I have a friend who's going to visit family in Okinawa this summer, and I've arranged for her to bring me some snacks when she returns. I've been intrigued ever since I heard you talk about things like Tokyo Banana and Sake Kit Kat, but I was wondering if you had some other suggestions on things I should ask my friend to try and grab. Coolish sounds wonderful, but I don't think that would survive the plane ride home. Brian from Oregon, I can confirm that Coolish definitely does not survive the plane ride home. Very tragic.
Yeah.
Very tragic.
I mean, I always bring you Sake Kit Kats, or just Kit Kats in general, whenever I come back to the UK, don't I? What I tend to do the most is at Narita Airport, they've got loads of gift shops and things, and they seem to have a lot of good, well-packaged and well-branded sake. And people love sake, even if they never drink it. I always bring back loads of sake for my friends and family, and a year later when I return, it's still there, unpackaged, no one's touched it. Nevertheless, people love it. So I buy like 7 or 8 bottles of sake in various forms and just ship that back and bring it with me, and it always goes down well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. I'd say sake.
Yeah.
What do you do, Pete?
It's a good shout.
Aside.
Yeah, I mean, the airport, you've always got a lot of yen in your back pocket. Make sure you get rid of all of the coins, as many coins as you can, before you leave. But they've got a great range of omiyage, packaged snacks and treats. You don't get many to a box, but they're always very well packaged and stuff. Buy one of those. They always sell those big circular cakes. It's like a big, massive, giant polo mint, but it's a cake. And you bring them home. You put them on the desk at work, and nobody really gets involved. To be honest, it's a bit like a bready cake, isn't it? So it's not particularly nice. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it's just get something that no one's had before. Bit of mochi, bit of nonsense. There's actually quite a few shops on Piccadilly. Near Green Park Station in London that have specific Japanese sweet shops, and they just sell like mochi cakes, rice cakes and stuff like that. And they always look really good, but I bet they're bloody expensive.
Well, if you're a dick like I am, I remember my gran wanted me to bring her back some Japanese fabrics and Japanese various trinkets and things from Japan. But I couldn't be bothered, or I forgot. And I got back to the UK, and I just went on Amazon and just bought a few there and was like, look, Gran, this is a trinket from Japan. Traditional Japanese sake cups. When they've just been, like, sent from Coventry or something.
Oh, yeah, but massively. That's the thing about the internet. Thing about the internet and the global economy, in that, you know, the internet brought everything together. I remember my mate spending, like, loads of money and loads of his space in his bag with, like, treats and tat and ket. As they say in the northeast, candy. And we got home, and there's a Japanese supermarket right around the corner from my house, and you could have bought all of those things in the Japanese supermarket. So there, if you do forget, you can go around the corner and grab some, I don't know, fucking pocket or something.
Yeah, just buy it all off the internet when you get back home and pretend you went to Japan.
Yeah.
Got one from Giorgio from Italy. Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm Giorgio from Italy. I listen to you usually when I'm going to university. I'm half Italian and half Czech, and I'm planning to go to Japan as soon as I can to do the same route as my father did in the 80s. You talked a few times about how France is viewed by Japan, but what about Italy and its people? How are they seen in Japan? I'd also like to know if Czech Republic and Prague are known in Japan, and if in my future trip I should present myself as half Italian and half Czech, or just choose one of the two nationalities. Love your channel, Giorgio. That's interesting.
Yeah, sounds like Giorgio wants to get with a lady. How shall I pretend?
Should he use? I think Italy is a lot better known than the Czech Republic in Japan, no doubt about that, given the abundance of Italian restaurants.
Super Mario.
There's not a single street in Japan that hasn't got an Italian restaurant, to be fair. Whether it's good Italian food, it's usually not. But they certainly appreciate Italian culture. It's up there with France and the UK, I'd say. I don't know. I'd say just be yourself. Be the real you. That's all that matters. But if you want to lie, maybe just say you're from Italy, because they're much more likely to know stuff about Italy.
I'd like to hear a Japanese person pronounce Paragu. It must be Paragu, isn't it? Fantastic.
Have you been to Prague or Czech Republic?
I've been to Prague. Beautiful, great food, inexpensive alcohol, and we went all around the city. Beautiful, beautiful place. A lot of these cities incurred the wrath of the stag do in the late 90s, early 90s. But I think it's calmed down a little bit in Prague. I think Czech Republic is now called Czechia or Czechia, I think. They rebranded and no one calls it the new name. It's the least successful rebranding of a country I've ever heard in my life. I think they're called Czechia now. It's really weird. I mean, I guess Georgia would know, but...
What I do know is Prague has cheap cheese. A friend of mine went
cheap
there.
Cheap cheese!
And regaled stories of cheese platters that came in at very low prices. And
I guess in that part of the world, isn't cheese actually quite... it's coveted because, obviously, Russia... The Russian trade bloc means that Russians spend a lot of time trying to import naughty cheese because their own cheese isn't quite as good. And there's actually an embargo on fancy cheese.
Did you just use the phrase naughty cheese?
Naughty cheese!
Naughty cheese.
Naughty little bit of cheese.
That'd be a great brand. That'd be a great brand name for some cheese. Naughty cheese.
We've got an email from Ben.
Ben.
Hello, Ben. Dear Chris and Pete Donaldson. Sorry. It works. I'm writing this letter in my desk near Cleveland, Ohio. Another Ohio person where I go to college. I've got to Tokyo for an internship this summer, and I have two urgent questions. Here we go. One, just a lot of dirty boys and girls, isn't there, texting in. Which nationality is sexiest for trying to chat up girls? I'm American from my father, but my mother is Finnish, and I was born and lived my life prior to college in Brussels, so I have a pick of the three. Or should I just lie and say I'm Italian? Why not go for being from Prague? Two, having grown up in Europe, I occasionally like a drink. Pete knows. But I'm only going to be 18 in Tokyo, so I fear I might not be able to do much nightlife while I'm there. How strict are drinking laws in Japan? And could I get away with something? Could I get away with sometimes going out? I love the Sean podcast. Best, Ben. I can tackle a latter. You can probably tackle a former.
Well, I love, again, the question of nationality. What nationality should I choose for chatting up Japanese women? Yep. I don't know. What I do know is American. I think American would probably be the most successful. Actually, Japanese girls seem to like Americans from my experience. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be on this podcast giving advice to people to deny their nationality, to increase the chances of sleeping with a girl. That's not what I do. Probably.
No.
But no, just tell them you're from America, from your father, and that your mum is from Finland, and that you've lived in Brussels. I think you've got three potential nationalities to draw from. Three potential chances to...
Avenues.
Look good. Yeah, three avenues to explore.
Yeah. I used to think that gimmicks and, you know, let's say suits would help you get with girls. Turns out... You actually have to be a decent conversationalist and a nice bloke. And let's face it, it helps that you're good looking and tall as well. So let's forget about the gimmicks and just deal with being an all right dude and just be interested in their lives.
Have you ever lied about where you're from? Have you ever told a girl that you're from somewhere
no,
that isn't Hartlepool?
No, God, no. We were in Tokyo once and we were drunk and one of my friends thought it was funny to pretend we were in Franz Ferdinand. I think I've spoken about this before on the podcast. And that got him nowhere because he was very much on the lookout. And we ended up in a karaoke bar. The thing about telling lies in 2019, everything's Googleable. So you can easily find out whether you're in Franz Ferdinand or not, and clearly we're
not. You're on bloody
in Franz
Wikipedia.
Ferdinand.
Last time I looked, you're on Wikipedia. I'm not on Wikipedia.
Why are you obsessed with being on Wikipedia and having a blue tick? It's a very strange.
It's the only thing that matters.
It's because you live on the internet. Your internet legitimacy. I fear for you. I fear for your psyche, Chris. It's meaningless. If it ends tomorrow, no one will miss it.
Well. What's interesting is I'm not on Wikipedia, but Abroad in Japan is. And I don't know who's written it. I've always wondered who writes these things. But it's pretty well researched and pretty detailed. So whoever wrote it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't write my own Wikipedia. So people just write it for you, don't they? Because they wrote it about the time I was on.
You didn't write it. I thought you wrote it.
No, it was very detailed. Somebody managed to. Somebody wrote it when I was about. When I just started on XFM about 12, 13 years ago. And because obviously a lot of those pages get removed. And somebody knew what university modules I did, so it must have been someone from my university. It must
that
have
is
been.
Creepy.
Yeah, it's really weird, very very strange, and you know, it's still up there though.
While we're on the subject of chatting people up using nationalities, have you ever chatted someone up using your Wikipedia page?
No, I don't think I have, Chris.
You definitely should.
I don't generally...
I'm on Wikipedia.
I don't generally do a lot of chatting up, to be honest. Too busy being chatted up, mate. Too busy. The drinking bit... I'm moving on. The drinking bit of this question... you got a show ID in nightclubs and stuff, but you can get everywhere else with no ID. That's why I can't remember the last time I was asked for ID anywhere other than a nightclub, so you can probably drink until the cows come home. Bars
obviously
don't generally ask.
If you're under 20, I can't encourage you to drink alcohol in Japan.
I can, I don't
because
care.
Because that's breaking the law. But what I will say is nobody, I don't think I've ever been ID'd, and nobody I know has ever been ID'd outside of a nightclub. That's the only place. So.
And if you buy booze in a 7-Eleven, all they do is ask you to click yes or no on their little screen if you're over 20.
Yeah, they love that, don't they? Mm. You have to press a physical screen to confirm how old you are.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Makes me feel like a badass motherfucker whenever I'm buying alcohol. Tapping a screen, being like, yeah, I'm old enough, I'm cool. I am that sad. We've got a story here from Ade from New Zealand about his trip to Mount Fuji.
Oh.
Do you want to read it out, Pete? Because you're the better vocalist.
How dare you?
You have a great voice.
Yeah, I'm in my little box and... I've just realised the drawback of being in my little vocal box that I bought for bloody 800 quid or something. It's going to get quite dusty, isn't it? And I'm incredibly sensitive to dust. So I'm going to have to hoover my little box. I'm going to have to hoover my box, Chris. Yeah, it's very strange.
In your podcast booth.
We got an email from Ad here from New Zealand. I've been a long-time listener and enjoy listening to the podcast on my way to university. I downgraded the word love listening to the podcast to enjoy listening to the podcast so as to not give us big heads. Now to the story. Me and my friend decided to go to Japan for a few days. Me and a friend decided to go to Japan a few years ago in July for a week and a bit. Before we left, I was inspired by your video of climbing Mount Fuji and really wanted to try the bullet climb for myself. After a few great days of exploring Tokyo from the sky to the Tsukiji. What is wrong with me this morning?
Tsukiji
Market. We decided to make our way to Mount Fuji. We left most of our luggage in our Airbnb and packed up a few essentials such as Pocari Sweat and took the bus to the mountain. We got to Mount Fuji at around 6 and there seemed to be barely anyone there, which was a bit odd. We got some dinner at a restaurant and started climbing around 7. Once again, my friend and I seemed to be the only ones there and climbing, which is a little bit unsettling and upsetting, but we continued to walk up the mountain. The weather was great and we could see the nearby towns lit up at dusk. About an hour into the climb, the weather started to turn. It got really windy and it started to rain hard. We stopped by a little hut which had some Japanese security guards and an American family inside. We wanted to take shelter in the hut but got kicked out by the guards. One of the family members was outside and yelling in Japanese at their phone something about getting an ambulance. Once he was off the phone, he came up to my friend and told us that if we ever needed help on this mountain, we would never get it. He then walked back into the hut visibly frustrated. It looked like one of the family members had hurt their leg and couldn't walk. At this point, we decided it wasn't the best idea to climb the mountain, so we walked back down. Once we were back down to where we started, we asked the security people if there were any buses back to Tokyo. This was around about 9 p.m. Unfortunately, there weren't any, but there was a bus going to the nearest town, which had a small train station. So we decided to catch the bus, and when we reached the town, we asked the people at the train station if there were any trains to Tokyo. They said no. There was a train to the next town over, which we could get a train to Tokyo, but we could possibly miss it if our train was late. We decided to risk it and ended up in the next town missing the train to Tokyo and stranded in a random town in the mountains in the middle of nowhere at 11 p.m. There were no hotels or hostels open, not even a convenience store, so we found two wooden benches next to the train station and set up our bed just using our bags as pillows. Once we were settled down after this big adventure, we started cracking up laughing, thinking about what a great yet unfortunate experience we were having. We had a really bad sleep until 4 a.m. We then caught the train to Tokyo, finally getting back to our Airbnb and sleeping until 1 p.m. Sorry for the long-winded story. That was my most memorable experience in Japan. Thanks for the great podcast, guys. Keep up the great work. Ad here.
Hey!
I wonder...
Well done, Pete.
What happened to the people in the weird hut?
They all died.
Somebody had hurt themselves. Then they said they weren't going to... So bizarre.
Sounds like an even worse experience than I had climbing Mount Fuji. I've met a few people. A good friend of mine climbed Mount Fuji in their first year, and they got within striking distance of the summit, and then the rain came, and it turned into like a hurricane or something. It
was right,
like really bad weather, and obviously you're exposed. You're 3,800 meters up a volcano, It must be terrifying, especially if there's thunder and lightning. I couldn't imagine a worse place to be. So,
yeah,
this is not a good story. Well, it's quite a funny story, but it's not a great experience.
Yeah, it's memorable.
Well, I mean, how do you feel reading this? Because you're considering climbing Mount Fuji, aren't you, in June?
I was considering, I'll be all right, I reckon.
Yeah?
As long as... I mean, to be honest, I mean, like, if you're that far away, you'd just be like, oh, I'll just spend a ridiculous amount of money on a taxi to get home. I'll just get a taxi to a hotel. And I know it's like going to cost me a ridiculous amount of money, but it's better than sleeping on
a
bench.
It would be about $400, I think.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to make peace with being an idiot. And I've made peace plenty of times of being a bloody idiot.
Poor old Ade. It must be really disheartening, though, to get so close to the summit of Mount Fuji and have to give up and go all the way back down and then miss all the trains and sleep on a bench.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
Nobody deserves that. But yeah, those huts are pretty treacherous. You get to a hut about 3,000 metres up and then they're not very nice. I didn't stay in one. I wanted to stay in one, but it was fully booked. But you look in through the window and it looks like a ghetto. Everyone's sleeping on top of each other, just really loud and horrible. But so I guess it's still better than sleeping outdoors on a rock like I did.
Yeah, so you don't ever... So there's not even a little kind of place you can stay that's out of the wind a little bit. There's not even a little shelter. There's just the huts and nothing else.
I remember getting to the summit of Mount Fuji, and it was really busy at about 3 a.m. because lots of people get there for the sunrise, right?
Yeah.
And I remember getting to the toilet, and there was a queue, and I got to the front of the queue, opened the toilet door, and inside the toilet, there was just a pile of people sleeping on top of each other. Not in the actual cubicles themselves, but like just dotted around the urinals and just in the room. It was really weird. I've never seen anything quite like it, but it just shows you how desperate people get at that point, because it is bloody cold up there. Even in the height of August, it's still like -5 or something. So it's seriously cold. And yeah, it's not nice when you've just climbed it all night long, but you'll see some desperate scenes up there. You'll ask yourself if it really
Why
is
have
worth
I done
it
this?
Just to see the sun come up over some mountains. Still undecided on if it was worth it or not.
But. Yeah, well, I mean, there's enough mountains in Fuji. There's enough mountains in Japan that you can climb that a little less. There's fewer people doing it, and it's a bit more fun, I imagine.
You could always
just choose a slightly smaller mountain or a mountain almost as big. But because I guess a lot of the times when you climb Mount Fuji, from what I've read, you're actually getting a bus up to quite a high point anyway. So like, there are other mountains that you can start from the bottom and take just as much time to get up and down and feel like just as much of an achievement. But it won't be as busy. And, you know, it won't be... Because hell is other people, as a great man once said. Or I think that might actually be misquoted. But, it's if you want a slightly more sedate and relaxing walk up a mountain, you might be better off choosing a different mountain.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as you say, the bus to Mount Fuji, you get off at the fifth station, which is already about 2,100 metres up.
Yeah.
So you kind of already cheated out of the first 2,000 metres. You can start at the bottom if you are mental or looking for a real challenge. I wouldn't advise it. It's still a tough climb from the fifth station to the top. It's pretty vertical, pretty steep. But yeah, I mean, I've climbed... My favourite place to climb is Mount Chaukai in Yamagata, where I used to live, because there's nobody there, because it's in the middle of nowhere. But when you get to the top, you have a 360 view of the Sea of Japan, the plains of Yamagata, the mountains in the distance. It's just a much more relaxing, incredible view. So if you've got a bit more time to spare, go north to Mount Chaukai and give that a climb. It's much more rewarding. And it's not as high. It's 2,200 metres, but you still have a fair climb. It still takes an 8-hour round-trip journey to climb it up and down.
Yeah.
And that's, for my money, a lot more pleasant.
Ah, well, there we go.
There you go. But keep the messages, keep the stories, the questions coming in, guys, to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time next Thursday. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
See you later. Bye.
This show is part of the Radio Stakhanov Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.